Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you woke, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One word more for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud walled cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a man big chest was throbbing for the blessed warming light. Along the valleys like the man, she's lonely crew, and a thousand blades were flushing at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon, and a thousand blades were flushing at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. It's January the 27th, 2010. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest. I'm going to consider this to be the first official episode of Radio Free Northwest since that initial test program I did a couple of weeks ago was so atrocious. Hopefully, at least my voice will hold up a little bit better this time. Let's just hope I don't start croaking nevermore like Edgar Allan Poe's Raven halfway through the second segment. We're going to kick off this series by reviewing something very basic, the Butler Plan for Northwest Migration. Now, there are four phases to the Butler Plan, and I'll be taking them one by one and going over each one in a separate show. This is the strategy named after the late Pastor Richard Gernt Butler of Hayden Lake, Idaho, the man we consider to be the main spiritual father of the Northwest Independence Movement. Although, of course, there have been others, both before and after Pastor Butler's time, who have advocated a new nation for white people here in the Pacific Northwest. The Butler Plan consists of four broad aspects or phases involving the creation, the build-up, and the operation of the Northwest Front as a political force for white revolution, with each phase containing certain goals or benchmarks that we have to achieve on our way to a new nation. These phases are not nailed to any given time frame so much as they entail a specific kind of activity and an agenda that has to be fulfilled. All four phases will be simultaneously ongoing in the various party units around the homeland, depending on how far developed each local is. And at any given time, the NF will be involved with issues relating to any or all of these phases. There will be a lot of overlap. On this episode of Radio Free Northwest, we're going to talk about Phase 1 of the Butler Plan, and this is the one that we're having so much difficulty with now. The relocation of the better elements of the existing racially conscious white community here to the Pacific Northwest. And this will be an ongoing project from this point on, and will continue even after political independence is achieved. 100 years from now, the Northwest Republic will still be seeking white immigrants from what is left of the Western world. It will be the primary function of the homeland to be just that, a homeland and a refuge for all the persecuted and endangered Aryan peoples of the world, from Afrikaners to Serbs to Ulstermen. The main problem we have to overcome now is something I mentioned briefly in my last fireside chat, and that is the apparent near-total loss of the alpha gene that once was the distinguishing feature of our people, that pioneer willingness and even eagerness to go first. It just seems to be gone. Really, you would think that once white people understood what is on offer out here, and once they read the Northwest novels, that they'd be on fire with enthusiasm, that they couldn't wait to come out here. I should be seeing out-of-state license plates coming over the hill every day here, but instead, ostensible white nationalists are hunkering down in their houses and their cheap furnished apartments and waiting for Harold to wave his magic wand and create the world I portray in my novels by magic. They are clinging like grim death to whatever is left of their middle-class lifestyle in nigger-infested Florida and Louisiana, in Mexicanized Texas and Arizona, in Jewified New York and Raleigh, and in the god-awful cesspool that is California. The incredible fact is that rather than bestir themselves with physical effort, most so-called white nationalists would rather stay where they are, in economic misery and in physical danger, surrounded by non-whites and liberal garbage and homosexual perverts, cowering amidst the ruins of their old middle-class lives. They'd rather sit tight and wait for someone else to do all the heavy lifting, rather than exert a small amount of effort, rather than take a modicum of risk, and come out here where they have a chance to create a new world. It's really difficult to believe that most white people today are the descendants either of pioneers who loaded up all their possessions into Conestoga wagons and set off across a trackless wilderness up the Oregon Trail to reach the Northwest with nothing at all waiting for them, or else they're the descendants of Irish and German and Scandinavian and Italian and Polish immigrants who packed up everything they owned into a few cheap trunks and suitcases and spent weeks at sea in the steerage of rusty old steamers to step ashore at Ellis Island again with nothing waiting for them, no one to set out the cakes and ale. What in God's name has happened to us? What have these goddamn Jews done to us to make us so weak, so timid, so afraid of our own shadows that we are now terrified to pack a moving van and take a 3 or 4 day drive down an interstate highway, sleeping in a soft motel bed every night, crossing in a matter of days and in comfort a span of territory it took those Conestoga wagons 9 months to cross, with our ancestors leaving graves behind at almost every stop. Guys, I'm going to take time out here, and I'm going to tell you a personal story. In May of 2002, when I was coming home myself, I was rolling westward down Interstate 80 in Nebraska, and I stopped for lunch at a truck stop somewhere between Hastings and North Platte, if I recall correctly. It was one of these big plaza-type truck stops with a motel and a big restaurant and a little shopping mall. I'm sure you've all seen the kind of place I'm talking about. And I bought a local newspaper from Hastings, if I remember right, and I read it while I was eating. And there was a story in that paper about a recent historical find in the area. A local utility crew had been digging an underground cable trench or something of the kind, and they had come upon a grave site with a rough wooden coffin. They called in archaeologists from some Nebraska university to excavate it and identify it. There were some remains in the coffin, presumably skeletal, which they were able to carbon date from around 1850 or so. There were the remnants of clothing, what appeared to be a calico and gingham dress. The archaeologists identified the remains as that of a female Caucasian, a teenage girl of about 16. Nothing to identify her beyond that, no way to tell what her name was. Judging from a number of other indicators, they believe that she'd been a member of a party of early pioneers who had been crossing the prairie, and she had died on the way. No way to tell how or why. Her family knocked together a makeshift coffin for her from whatever lumber they had to hand, possibly part of their wagon, and buried her before moving on their way westward, leaving their daughter behind forever, to be remembered only as a name and maybe some old faded 19th century glass plate photograph among her descendants who eventually made it to California or Oregon or Washington. And when I had read this newspaper story, I looked all around me at the restaurant and the motel and the little stores full of useless plastic junk and the superhighway outside with the cars and the trucks whizzing by at 65 miles an hour on their way west. And for the first time, I think it really hit me what those pioneers had gone through in order to do what so many of you are too timid and frightened to do. These unknown white people 150 years ago left their homes in Pennsylvania or North Carolina or Massachusetts, walking or riding at about 5 miles an hour, most likely to St. Joseph, Missouri, where they spent their life savings on overpriced supplies, and then they just started walking west. No one waiting for them, no idea where they'd end up, no idea what lay ahead, just following an ancient call of our race that has been with us for 5,000 years, ever since the first Aryans started walking west towards the setting sun from our first homeland around Lake Baikal in central Russia. The Celts, the Doric Greeks, the Medes, the Scythians, the Goths, the Franks and Lombards, the Slavs, the Magyars, the Norse, that's how they all got to where they settled and became nations. 5,000 years this little stroll of ours has been going on, and now we're too timid and weak to complete the journey and save our people from extinction. those ancestors of ours set out fully knowing what price they might pay for this new land, and they paid it. When they left their daughter or their young wife in that crude box buried beneath the Nebraska sod. But us? Oh, no, we can't come northwest. That's too risky. That's too dangerous. We might not be able to get a minimum wage job in Washington flipping burgers beside Mexicans. Oh, horrors. No. Too chancy. What in God's name have these evil Jews done to us? What have we done to ourselves? The Butler Plan has been in existence since the year 2000. The Northwest novels have been around beginning from 2003. The central idea of Northwest independence has been adequately explained to those in our own community, and the complete lack of any realistic alternative plan, or indeed any plan at all, is now crystal clear. So what the hell is everybody waiting for? Basically, they're still waiting for Harold Covington to wave his magic wand, waiting for me to pull the magic beans out of my pocket. They're still watching and waiting for Harold to do it all and produce a finished product that they don't have to help build. They are waiting for Harold and the small handful of people I have here in the homeland to get all the heavy lifting done. They're waiting for the cakes and ale to be set out on the picnic tables. Now let's be blunt, they are waiting to be given things. Oh, sure, when the word gets out that there's some place white nationalists can go and meet actual real people and not email addresses, then we'll have a flood of newcomers once the dam breaks and they see someone else going first. We just can't find anyone who's willing to go first. I'm not referring to the YMWNBTTOTBSs, the young men with nothing but the T-shirts on their backs. They're a special case, and I'll discuss them later on. But the fact is that we don't have a bunkhouse or a refrigerator full of beer to offer them, and they're not really part of the equation at the moment. I get complaints to the effect of, "Oh, Harold, I can't come northwest now. There's no safety net." Well, you're right. The lack of a safety net didn't bother our pioneer ancestors who loaded up their Conestoga wagons, and it didn't bother the immigrants who crowded into the holds of those ships headed for Ellis Island, but these are 21st century white people and they're not made of the old stuff, the right stuff. 21st century whites are products of Anheuser-Busch, the Frito-Lay Corporation, and Mickey D's. No, what we need are substantial white people who have displayed some energy, some talent, some work ethic, and achieved some personal success in life. We need you to come here, to bring your skills and your talents and your assets with you, and help us build that very safety net so that when this whole American ball of wax comes unglued and we have thousands of white people showing up here in the homeland as genuine, honest-to-God refugees, there will be some way for us to take them in and get them incorporated into the party and the revolution. It's been said that if someone is a success in Florida or Ohio or Texas or Wisconsin, then they're not going to come to the Northwest because they don't need to. This assumes that these are just typical Americans who do nothing unless it's for economic motives or out of self-interest, and that's not the kind of migrants we need here in the homeland. We're not asking people to migrate because there's something in it for them, although in point of fact, there is quite a bit in it for them personally. We're asking them to come home to the land that God and or destiny has appointed to be our people's lifeboat in the storm, because it is right. Let's consider this a test of character. We need people with that old pioneer spirit who do not come expecting to be given things on their arrival. The American sense of entitlement stops here. We will either recover that old pioneer spirit or else we will perish from the face of the earth. So let me just tell you this. If and when you finally do screw your courage to the sticking point, as Shakespeare said, and you're on your way out here to your future homeland down Interstate 80, or maybe Interstate 90 if you take the more northerly route, look out your car or truck window at that barren landscape around you as you're going through Nebraska or Colorado or Wyoming, and think about how many other graves like that young girl's are out there, undiscovered and unnamed, along the way that you're traveling at 65 miles an hour. And when you do, all of a sudden, whether or not you can get a job in Seattle or Boise or some small town in Oregon won't seem quite so earth-shaking a consideration now, will it? Okay, it's time for our mid-rave musical break. I wasn't sure what to play here. I don't want this to become a complete Irish music festival, but let's face it, Irish and Celtic, or Celtic if you prefer, is some of the best white music going these days, and later on I can spin you some Norwegian black metal rock, a little bit of bluegrass, maybe some classical cuts, whatever. But today I think I'll lay a little Rollins Cross on you. Okay, time to get into your email questions and suggested topics for discussion. I asked for these on Sunday, and I got quite a few responses, so I'll try to get to as many as possible. If I don't get to your question or your topic in this episode, don't worry. I've kept them, and I'll get to all of them in coming broadcasts. Question. I am not sure if it would be a topic to which you would be interested in talking about, but I think an interesting proposal would be an annual or even biannual Northwest Fest, a festival, meet and greet, concert, etc., for those already in the Northwest and or those contemplating the idea, from Hewitt in Oklahoma. Well, we have something like that, kind of, here in this neck of the woods. the Nordic Fest in Paulsbo every spring. For those of you who have never been to the Olympic Peninsula, Paulsbo is a small town set on a hilltop on the west side of the Puget Sound in Kitsap County. It was founded and built originally by Norwegian and Danish immigrants to Washington back in the 1890s, and it has a very neat Scandinavian feel to it. There's one of those touristy kind of deals, you know, put on by the local Chamber of Commerce to bring in money to the local businesses, and it's called the Nordic Fest. It's every spring. The object being to celebrate Scandinavian history and heritage, so you've got all kinds of Norska craft displays and history exhibits and folk dancing and costumes and, of course, all kinds of food and beer, which is one of my problems with it as a meeting place. I won't go off into my long booze spiel at this time, but I will simply say that, like I've said in my novels and elsewhere, I am dead against any attempt to mix racial politics and alcohol. You have to remember, I went through the Glenn Miller experience, and no, that is not a retro jazz group. The Paulsbo Nordic Fest has also become contaminated with political correctness. A couple of years ago, they had a nigger festival queen, which is simply nauseating. I don't like going to events like that where the Jews and the libs rub our noses in their power, at least not until we're in some kind of position to do something about it, which isn't going to be for a while yet. Now, what you seem to be talking about, Hewitt, is an Aryan Nation-style big annual meeting. Right now, that's not on the cards, at least as far as the NF goes. We're trying to learn from the mistakes of the past through building small individual cells. Now, the movement has learned through long and bitter experience that it simply isn't a good idea to have big open meetings and let any Tom, Dick, and Harry with a pale skin walk through the door. The time for big rallies, if ever, will be far in the future. There is another group that usually gets together for such an event in the summer, somewhere here in the Northwest, in a public park or some other venue like that. For obvious reasons, these folks want to play it close to the vest. These events are strict invitation only, so strict indeed that I've never been invited to one. And I can well understand the need for security, since if the Reds and the Antifas were to show up at one of these meets, we'd probably have another Greensboro on our hands, and nobody needs to go through that again. Okay, question. Will the election of the Republican in Massachusetts reduce the extent to which the great white blob feels dispossessed enough to be interpreted as hope for reform rather than revolution? And it's signed Kate Barker. Okay, although normally I don't pay much attention to the system's electoral dog and pony shows, this is actually a very fascinating development. That Massachusetts Senate seat has been held by a member of the Kennedy family well over half a century. Teddy held it for something like 47 years, and he inherited it from JFK, who left it to become president in 1960. And JFK was elected to the Senate in November of 1953, about 7 weeks after I was born. That means that for every day of my existence, except for my first couple of months as a baby, that Massachusetts Senate seat has been the personal property of one family, which is exactly the kind of thing that the Constitution was set up to prevent. We're not supposed to have a hereditary dynasty or nobility in this country. The Democrats were so overconfident, they didn't figure they needed to put up any kind of real fight, and by the time they realized that the pale-skinned natives were getting restless, it was too late to call in Acorn or prepare properly stuffed ballot boxes in the old Democratic tradition. I think another reason the Democrat lost was that Massachusetts is the only state in the Union that has a single-payer government health plan similar to Obamacare. They've had it for about 2 years now, and the people can see that it doesn't work. The state is now bankrupt and existing on federal handouts and goodies that Teddy was able to get for the state out of the government in Washington. Masses of blacks and illegal immigrants have moved to Massachusetts in order to get to what amounts to free medical care. Doctors and other medical professionals are moving their offices across state lines into Rhode Island, Connecticut, and New Hampshire in order to escape from the mass care bureaucracy. And the last remaining productive white people, who are also the state's last remaining tax base, are also fleeing across state lines as well to avoid the crippling taxes necessary to pay for free medical care for hundreds of thousands of black welfare mammies and illegal alien families with Papa and Mamacita and 10 little bambinos. The people of Massachusetts know what Obamacare would mean for the whole country. Everyone would be forced to buy private insurance in what amounts to an unofficial tax on the remaining wealth and productivity of white people in the private sector in order to transfer that wealth in the form of free medical care to people with black and brown skins. There would be a national means test imposed, probably based on your gross income, on your federal income tax return, in order to ensure that no successful or affluent white person or family escaped the net. In my almost non-existent income bracket, the only premium scale I've seen so far tells me that I would have to pay about $1,500 per year for Obamacare, possibly more, because I have all kinds of pre-existing conditions, and I simply can't do that. If the FBI or the Secret Service are really serious about sending me to prison for my writings and my beliefs, all they need to do is wait until Obamacare passes, and then I really will be a criminal and liable to arrest because I won't be buying it. I can't. I don't have the money. So, guys, if you're listening, all you have to do is wait for Obamacare, and then you can come and get me. Now, when this Massachusetts election result came down, there was a lot of hoopla in the press and the media and the cable news shows about, you know, what it meant. Well, what it may mean, what it does mean, I suspect, is that presuming the Democrats get slaughtered in 2010, as they appear to be heading for, that stupid nigger in the White House may become a lame duck for the last 2 years of his presidency, or in his case, a lame monkey, and then the liberals won't need him anymore. In fact, he'll be an embarrassment. Now, he could be of some use to them as a martyr. And when that situation arrives on the scene, if I were Mr. Obama, I would start sweating and wearing a bulletproof vest. Because I will say this much, I know this is a dangerous topic and we shouldn't be talking about this and et cetera, et cetera. But I don't, as I've said before, I don't let the federal government dictate to me what I can talk about. If Obama ever is assassinated, I can tell you right now, it's not going to be one of us. Because, frankly, we're just not competent to do something like that. It's going to be someone within the system, probably someone within the Democratic Party, who has decided, basically, that Barack Hussein Obama has outlived his usefulness. Now, they may blame one of us for it. Probably some poor old good old boy from Georgia with black teeth who works in a gas station. They may set him up like they set up Lee Harvey Oswald. But Obama could well end up being of the best use to his lords and masters by being the great Negro martyr, the magic Negro of legend, so forth and so on. Oh, God, can you imagine? I mean, we've seen all this Martin Lucifer coon, this Martin Luther King cult over the past 20 years. Can you imagine what it would be like if Obama ever got it? Jesus. That's why I tell our own people, you know, just, and guys, I'm not kidding. You know, we don't need to be thinking about, you know, assassinating this nigger. You know, don't do it if the thought is even crossing your mind. He is far more use to us where he is making a monumental hash up of his office. You know, so just for the record, and I'm not, again, like I say, I'm not saying this just to cover my ass. When anyone brings up the, you know, suggestion of assassinating Obama, I just say, no, I'm not for it. Don't do this. And it would be the wrong thing in the wrong place in the wrong time for us. And I'm serious about that. Well, I'll see if I get a knock on my door for that. Anyway, question. What do you think about the recent resurgence in anti-Nazi movies from Hollywood, such as Blood Creek, Dead Snow, and Valkyrie? And that's from Cindy Lou Who. Well, I didn't bother to watch Valkyrie since I already know the whole anti-Nazi line about World War II. I've been watching that propaganda all my life, and I'm not interested in anything the Jews have to say on the subject. Or, you know, it leaves me cold. I've just heard it all before. It was bullshit when I was a kid. It's bullshit now. I saw a preview for Blood Creek, which apparently is based around the idea that Hitler was some sort of black magician like Sauron in Lord of the Rings, which is not an uncommon myth. I did see Dead Snow, which frankly I thought was a hoot. It's a variation on these cheap American slasher films where the teenagers drive out into the sticks in their SUVs and the girls flash their boobs in unnecessary shower scenes, and then the evil southern redneck in a weird mask comes out of the woods and starts chopping them all up with hooks. or a chainsaw or whatever. Only this one was made in Norway, so the teenagers were on a snowboarding expedition and they unwittingly stumbled on hidden Nazi gold. Don't ask me why the Germans would hide treasure under a ski lodge in Norway instead of using it for the war effort, but that's the plot. Anyway, the evil Nazi snow zombies arise from the frozen white landscape to protect the treasure, and it ends up with kids and Nazi zombies chasing one another with Schmeissers and snowmobiles. It's just plain silly. I don't recommend it, but it's so silly, I don't even think it can really be called an anti-national socialist movie. It's just a grade B zombie movie. As for the Jews of Hollywood being obsessed with us, oh yeah, they love wearing Nazi uniforms. I understand that to this day, any time there is a part for an SS officer or a German general, there are A-list Jewish actors lining up at the casting director's office or sending their agents to line up at the office trying to get the role. Jews love to wear Nazi uniforms. They are fascinated with us, and not just National Socialists. They're fascinated with any white people whose minds are not totally under control and who know who and what they are. Okay, next question. Dear Harold, how about the nice Supreme Court ruling we have this week? As if anybody needed more evidence of the sickness, here is more. Even our implied freedom is slipping away. Ben from Texas. Hey, I assume you're talking about the ruling which states that a corporation is legally a person, and therefore they have rights of freedom of speech, including the right to participate in the political process of electoral politics in the form of campaign contributions. Yeah, the liberals and lefties are having a hissy fit over that one. What it does, basically, is it guts the McCain-Feingold Campaign Finance Reform Act of 2003. I think it was 2003. Yeah. Anyway, it allows corporations to run their own political committees and make legal contributions instead of having to disguise them and cover them up by a fake paper trail like they do today. What that means is that the Republicans are going to be able to go completely batshit on the television ads during 2010's election. And considering the shape the Democrats are in, I don't blame them for being petrified. Now, don't get me wrong. Capitalism is no more a friend to the white man than Marxist socialism is. Remember, it is the capitalists who have brought the Mexicans and the other illegal aliens here in their quest for cheap labor. But what McCain-Feingold was about was basically defunding the conservative right so that instead of the neocons being able to flood elections with corporate money, the left could flood elections with union money and George Soros money, as they did in 2008. I find it very ironic that John McCain was screwed in 2008 by the very law that he had helped pass in 2003 in order to show what a maverick and a rhino he was and win liberal approval, which is always a mistake. I guess what goes around comes around, John. Okay, I think we're pretty much out of time here, and for those of you whose questions and discussion topics I didn't get to, don't worry, I didn't forget you or ignore you. I've saved them, and I will be getting to them over the next few weekly podcasts. And so let's see how good my mixing skills are. Our hour is up. And so that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4586, Seattle, Washington 98104. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sarsha on the Bon. Freedom.
By the singing river, the dark mass of men were seen, far above their shining weapons on their own beloved green. Death to every foe and traitor, forward strike the marching tree.